Al Jazeera Podcasts.
Today, do you care who owns TikTok?
The question of what's in for you in TikTok is going to be very much governed by who owns it and what their aims are.
U.S. lawmakers have given the app's Chinese owners an ultimatum: sell or effectively be banned in the United States. I'm Malika Bilal, and this is The Take. The controversy over TikTok has been in the news for years now. So I talked to someone who's been following the ups and downs of this for a while.
My name's Alexander B. Howard. I usually go by Alex. These days, I am an independent writer and analyst, author here in Washington, D.C., taking a pretty active interest in digital democracy and continuing to focus on improving public access to information.
Where am I catching you right now?
You're catching me at my table here at a little row house in Capitol Hill.
Are you on TikTok?
I'm a consumer. I've periodically downloaded and used it and seeing how the algorithm responds to my use, my inputs, and then I delete it and then reload it and see what happens. I have, despite some nudging, have not uploaded any videos myself, much less done any singing or dancing.
The world is missing out. So Alex, lawmakers have been trying for years now to force TikTok's Chinese owner ByteDance to divest from the company or face a ban in the United States. And now that is one step closer.
The bill is passed, and without the objection, the motion to reconsider is laid on the table.
The Chinese owners of the social media app used by around 170 million Americans would have 6 months to sell its U.S. operation.
The bill passed overwhelmingly in the U.S. House on Wednesday. And the U.S. argument is that TikTok is a national security threat, with the potential to misuse users' data and influence the public. Can you explain what they deem that threat to be and what kind of data TikTok is keeping?
Sure. So there's, as you neatly separated out, two different issues here. One is with respect to what people see and when, which is to say the feed. So instead of you having to navigate, it simply shows you things and you can swipe, et cetera. And then the concern that's been expressed is that what's in that feed could shape or influence public opinion or even public health, public safety, or even at the highest level, national security. This is something that I think has not been grounded in evidence in terms of saying here is a specific demonstrated harm where there was damage to public health because of X, Y, and Z content being shown. That's the first side of things, right? The algorithm. The second goes to the broader issue around data collection. And there's all kinds of data you can collect from people, from really basic things like where you're logging on from, your IP address, to much more nuanced, granular data like where you are physically, right? To what you're searching for, to what you click on, to what you share. There are a lot of other permissions that people may or may not give a given application, which can get into other kinds of data, biometric data, for instance. The great challenge in the United States is that we don't have a baseline data protection act that says this company cannot collect these kinds of data from these kinds of people in these kinds of contexts.
So the U.S. argues that China could use TikTok to influence the U.S. elections using the platform's algorithms. And it also has concern about China being able to use the info, the data that ByteDance collects from this app.
Critics argue the company works too closely with the Chinese Communist Party and could seize U.S. user data and even push a political agenda.
Is there any evidence that is actually happening? And how would that work?
I'm not convinced that the ability of a technology company to show people different things represents a national security threat. I'm dubious of that claim. You know, I don't think that the fact that TikTok has managed to put together a more engaging river of videos makes them more of a national security threat than Instagram, YouTube, or other Meta properties or other apps. You know, is Snapchat a national security threat with their ephemeral messaging? I guess the argument is they're not because they're US-based and controlled by an American company.
Does that make you feel safer?
Well, yes and no. Safety is predicated upon your sense of imminent threat, right? If I'm walking on the sidewalk or if I'm walking in the street, I feel less safe in the street because our country has a huge issue with people hitting pedestrians. This is a problem in Washington, D.C. The ownership of a platform does make a difference in the absence of having a strong data protection authority. The problem I have here is that the data collection that we're talking about here is not limited to TikTok, and that you have a vast apparatus across the commercial private sector in the United States that collects a vast amount of data about what we do with our devices. And that data can and is being acquired by our government, right? There's a demonstrated activity happening there. And indeed, every single technology company that operates these platforms at a global scale has government requests coming to them for that data. What makes me feel safer is when they fight government requests for that data, when they fight the gag orders and say, we have been presented with a national security letter requiring data about people in this area doing this thing. The question is, does the fact that a government that we've deemed adversarial because of its actions owns through the merging of state power, of political power, and industry, an ownership stake give a special consideration? Yes, I think it does, right? This is not to say that there could be harms. It's not to say that public opinion couldn't be manipulated or even to assert that it hasn't been, right? It's not, I think, unfair to try to evaluate that. But to do that, we'd have to actually have an understanding into who was shown what when. And then to understand if that had a downstream impact, right? And then, of course, to balance the equities around freedom of expression and access to information, which in our country have constitutional protections they frankly don't elsewhere.
So I hear what you're saying there. FBI Director Christopher Wray spoke at the House at a hearing, and he said,
Americans need to ask themselves whether they want to give the Chinese government the ability to control access to their data.
To me, based on what you're saying, it sounds like what Americans need to be asking ourselves is, what about our data protection and privacy and why there aren't laws around that? Why do you think there was overwhelming bipartisan support for this when there hasn't been much movement on making sure there are ways that all apps can be forced to ensure that users' data is protected?
That's a big question, right? The first is, as I think it's obviously political. There is a rising tide of Sinophobia in our country. It has been for a long time. Xenophobia is a pretty old story in the United States. And there is a Chinese government that it is deeply integrated into its industry. There has been a lot of demonstrated hostile behavior towards our government, frankly, our civil servants, our military, and a lot of theft of intellectual property from our companies and from individuals. There are real reasons to be concerned. And so while I believe in the good faith of the FBI director in terms of his interest in protecting Americans, I would suggest that he's perhaps not being entirely open about the fact that if that data went away, if our federal government were not able to surveil in the way that it does, if it weren't able to do vast amounts of data capture overseas, if it weren't able to acquire this data through this other means, then it would lose some tools. Whether we think they should have these tools or not should be debated on its own. But to focus on TikTok, I think, obfuscates the actual landscape in the United States and the very real data collection that's happening from the rest of the tech giants.
The Chinese government has pushed back against the U.S. House bill, describing the potential TikTok ban as an act of bullying that would backfire on the United States. This is China's foreign ministry spokesperson.
Although the U.S. has not found any evidence of TikTok threatening national security, it has never stopped going after TikTok.
The CEO of TikTok, Shouzi Chu, posted a video on Thursday describing the House vote as disappointing. He said his company is invested in, quote, keeping user data safe and the platform free from outside manipulation.
This bill gives more power to a handful of other social media companies. It will also take billions of dollars out of the pockets of creators and small businesses. It will put more than 300,000 American jobs at risk, and it will take away your TikTok.
And TikTok creators say this potential ban threatens both their livelihoods and their freedom of speech. That's after the break.
The Inside Story podcast dissects, analyzes, and helps define major global stories. We get into the details with experts who explain how policies affect people. The Inside Story podcast by Al Jazeera. Find us wherever you listen to podcasts.
TikTok creators protested outside the Capitol last Wednesday before the House passed its bill.
If I had any concerns about China, I would have the same concerns about right here in America sharing and selling our data too.
Some lawmakers joined the protesters, like Representative Ro Khanna.
You know, I voted no. And the reason I voted no is because of the First Amendment. And I think the courts are going to strike this down.
The protest echoed all over TikTok, with some creators saying the ban threatens their income, while pro-Palestinian influencers feared a ban would impact their outreach about what Israel is doing in Gaza.
So you and I both know that this TikTok ban isn't about China, right? It's all about Palestine.
Retrospectively, that's the name of this creator's TikTok channel, posted this on Thursday.
This is a sign of a much larger shift that's happening in the U.S. right now. And that shift, essentially, is a shift from a centralized world where information comes from up top to a decentralized world where information comes from each other. And that is a terrifying change for the U.S. empire.
I was at the Capitol on Wednesday with a bunch of other TikTok creators.
Callie Goodwin is a business owner in the U.S. state of South Carolina and told us she uses TikTok to promote her pre-stamped greeting card company.
So my small business is Sparks of Joy Co. We put the postage on the stamp so that our customers don't have to go to the post office.
She said 98% of her company's business is the result of her TikTok advertising. So she was very disappointed by the bill.
I think that this is very much a power move. TikTok has the ability to unite people. And it was pretty much proven this past week with that uniting of the voices that our government is a little afraid of that and are a lot of afraid of that.
Now, she's focused on keeping the U.S. Senate from voting on the bill, which could make it much more likely to become a law.
I think that it's now time that we chat with the Senate and we talk to each of our senators and have a conversation about the impact that TikTok has. Let's address the data security issues as a whole. I think there's both threats, foreign and domestic. And so what can we do to create better data privacy laws that are more comprehensive than just banning one app?
So, Alex, let's talk about the future. The TikTok bill passed the U.S. House, and now it's in the hands of the Senate. President Biden has said he will sign the bill once it lands on his desk.
President Joe Biden says it could be a national security risk.
If they pass it, I'll sign it.
Which is ironic because his campaign for re-election is on TikTok, and the base that uses TikTok is one that his campaign needs. There is opposition, though, to the bill in the Senate. Senator Rand Paul has said it is inconsistent with the First Amendment, which protects free speech.
180 million Americans use this social media platform to express themselves. And if the company is banned or you say it can't have the current ownership and the company goes away, you're basically taking their First Amendment rights away with them also.
We know that previous attempts to ban TikTok have been stalled in the Senate. So what do you think might happen here?
So there's a couple different things in what you brought up. as a political matter, it's probably not a great look for a president trying to get the votes of young people and to hear their concerns to take away a platform that has become incredibly sticky and has been a source of expression and of humor and of interest. Mm-hmm. I think obviously going there himself and not talking with people there, right? Just posting campaign videos that are not interactive and sort of pushing for what I think would be much more sensible, which is to say that I don't want to take away your voice and I don't want to ban this platform, but we need to change the laws in our country so that the amount of data they collect about you is more limited. And we need to get more insight into how and where they're showing people content so that if we do see the outbreak of a more hot conflict that the United States is directly involved in, if there is a hot war, that we have some kind of tools to think about what's being shown to whom and when, if that does actually come down to a public safety or national security issue. This election season is going to feature these kinds of manipulated media, synthetic media, and everything in between. I think the argument that Senator Paul, who's more of a libertarian bent, is making is a rational one, right? There is a consideration about whether or not knocking off a given company from an app store using state power is a precedent we want to set. These apps have been blocked or banned in other countries. Social media apps that come from the United States have been blocked, banned, censored, or filtered in other countries for a long time, including China. Mm-hmm. And our ability to say, we don't think that's the appropriate policy. Instead, we think that the best way is to limit data collection, to uphold people's privacy rights, to uphold the freedom of speech, to allow people to assemble and express themselves, is something we think is very important as part of the 21st century in terms of healthy democracies.
And that's The Take. This episode was produced by Syed Khalili and Ashish Malhotra, with Amy Walters, Nagin Oliai, Khalid Sultan, Chloe Kaylee, Miranda Lin, David Enders, Sonia Bagat, Zaina Bezer, Veronica Campana, and me, Malika Bilal. Our sound designer is Alex Roldan. Alexandra Locke is The Take's executive producer, and Ney Alvarez is Al Jazeera's head of audio. We'll be back.